Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis, and today we're going to talk about the repayment assistance plan, the RAP plan. And unfortunately, no, it's not the good kind of RAP, the kind that I like to listen to. This RAP is not good. I love dad jokes. Y'all know that. So anyways, RAP, repayment assistance plan. What is it? Why are we talking about this? Is there a chance this is going to take over and become law? When could you switch into it? There's a lot of questions about the RAP plan right now, and we're going to talk about it in today's pod. So the RAP plan, and we're just going to say RAP in this episode, and just know that I'm talking about the IDR proposal from the House GOP and not the fun music that a lot of people like to listen to, right? So the RAP IDR plan, RAP, repayment assistance plan, it is 10% of income for 30 years, or it's 10% of income for 10 years if you're doing PSLF. Now, this would be the only plan offered to any borrower who is not already enrolled in a program as of July 2026. If you are enrolled in a program as of July 2026 already, for example, you just completed your first year of dental or vet school or something like that, 2025 to 2026, you would retain access to the old ways of doing things for up to 3 years. So that is allowing people that were enrolled in school this year to finish out under the existing set of rules for borrowing, at least, not necessarily for repayment plans. So RAP, as of now, would theoretically allow people to switch into it if they wanted to. And the formulas are very different from what's come before. So what they're proposing, the House GOP, which we still have a long way ahead of us as to what's going to happen, the House GOP wants to consolidate every repayment plan that's ever been into the standard plan and the IBR 25-year plan, which is 15% of income. So they want to eliminate absolutely everything that's come before and put everybody into the income-based repayment plan, the old IBR version that passed in 2007. Or give you an option to switch into the RAP plan, the RAP plan, which is 10% of income for 30 years if you're doing the private sector. So let's think about this a little bit. The RAP plan is different from the IBR plan. How is it different? It's 10% of income, but it's not really 10% of discretionary income. It's 10% of AGI minus $50 a month per kid that you have. So if you have three kids, you take off $150 a month off of the payment. It's not discretionary income. Discretionary income definition says you can make, you know, 150% of the poverty line before they take anything, and then they only take 10% of that amount above that, right? Now, on top of that, the other weird thing about this is if you are a five-figure income earner, the formula for the RAP plan is very different from the IBR plan. So if you are a five-figure income earner, what happens is the percent of AGI is actually a scaled 1 to 10%. Every 10,000 of additional income, the percent of your AGI goes up by 1% on the payment. So as an example, if you make $10,000 to $20,000 a year, you pay 1% of AGI. If you make $50,000 to $60,000 a year, you pay 5% of AGI under the RAP plan. So that is very different. In some ways, it's a little bit reminiscent of the SAVE plan with its very complicated like formula for getting forgiveness over certain numbers of years, over certain amounts of debt that you have. It's a little bit different because this is like calculating the payment based off of income thresholds. Now, there's a lot of problems with this plan. There's no inflation adjustments, right? So over time, everybody's payment would go up towards 10%. The other problem with it is 30 years is a long time to keep somebody in debt. I will say that it's good that they do preserve married filing separate. That's a positive. One question on this is, you know, who should consider switching if this plan were to become reality? What would that mean? I will say this, that a lot of people that are close to forgiveness are probably going to prefer the IBR plan. If you're real close to forgiveness, you know, getting done is not bad, right? I'm saying getting close to private sector forgiveness. If you are in the PSLF world, you know, provided they, in the final bill, they did allow the RAP plan to count for PSLF, then you'd probably switch because it's 10% of income instead of 15, right? So that would be something to think about. What about if you have $500,000 of debt from like vet school or dental school? Would you switch to the RAP plan? Well, the real answer here is it depends, because once you switch into it, you are trapped in the RAP plan according to their rules. So if you switched into it, you were stuck forever in it. There's no plan switching. There's no stay on the RAP plan and then switch to IBR at the last second. That's completely not allowed at all, with no phase in on that requirement. The proposal from the Biden administration had a 5-year period for phasing into that. So the phasing into the no plan switching is what I mean. We are already seeing too from this administration, from what I can tell, them making it a lot harder to even enroll in the pay plan. So the phasing out of the pay plan was part of the SAVE plan rule, which is under a complete injunction, right? so far, what we can tell, people that are eligible for pay are not being allowed to enroll in pay online with no justification whatsoever being given. That's something that we're monitoring. It really does seem like this administration is trying to force its view of student loan repayment kind of early before a lot of the rules have been formalized. And so if we think about this RAP plan versus old IBR, what about the Senate? What happens when the Senate gets its say? Is this what's going to go into place? So think about the Senate and the fact that it's more moderate than the House. I do think that they're trying to mitigate the political blowback of this bill, the big, beautiful bill for this reconciliation that they want to pass. This is like the singular legislative thing that this Republican Congress wants to do, like period, in terms of the big legislation that it hopes to pass. This is it. This is everything for them. So they really have a huge incentive to pass something. Now, with the student loan piece of things, you know, remember that the SAVE plan being repealed saves them $300 billion on paper, even though it's already dead in the courts. They can still use legislative maneuver to claim $300 billion in savings. So they have a strong incentive to do something on student loans in this bill. It would not cost them a whole lot of money to preserve pay a new IBR for existing borrowers. That would not be very expensive of them to do. I do think that there's a chance that if the Senate and House hear from a lot of their constituents saying that they want their contracts to be honored, that they were promised the new IBR and the pay plans and their contracts when they attended school, that that's something that should be honored. We understand if it's not going to be honored for new borrowers, but it should be honored for existing borrowers. I would be sending that message to your elected representative right now if you're on the pay or the new IBR plan. Because what they're doing is saying, well, we don't like that we gave away a 3% mortgage and we really, you know, want to rewrite it to a 6% mortgage, so we're just going to retroactively do that. That's basically what Congress is trying to do right now. They're trying to take advantage of this subsection of the Higher Education Act, which, to be honest, I didn't even know existed, that does say that Congress can basically do whatever it wants on student loans if they get sufficient majorities, even, you know, though things have already been promised in promissory notes. Now, that might still be subject to a legal battle. They might still sue over it. They might still try to block it. Who knows? It might be successfully blocked, but then it would work its way up to the Supreme Court, right? But because of the Supreme Court's current 6-3 conservative majority, I think that we have to kind of err on the side of that Congress could get away with doing what it wants to do. Here's a real question if you are a Senator Tillis in North Carolina running for re-election in 2026. So this big, beautiful bill would tax endowment income, I believe, at like 21%. I think I saw a proposal that was floated that would do that. It would cap overall borrowing at 150K for graduate and professional school. Actually, 150 for grad, like for professional school, and like 100 overall for like graduate programs. So if you are home to a Duke University and half of the students there are on, you know, financial need type scholarships, but and you know, and the endowment is going to be supporting a lot of that. If you put a bill like this in place, you know, a lot of times endowments put their assets in tax inefficient investments because of that tax exemption, because you can get higher returns from the fact that these assets are not tax efficient. So for example, you might go invest in a bunch of real estate that throws off a whole lot of rents and dividends and things like that that are taxed at high rates. And you might do that because you know you have an endowment that's historically been not taxed on that investment income. So you can justify investing a bunch in those kind of assets instead of like growth stocks, which don't distribute their income. They usually use it for share buybacks and things that make the stock price go up. So that's more tax efficient. So endowments could be absolutely punched in the mouth with this bill. And so suddenly, if you're a Duke University, you have way less money from your endowment. You know, you think about you're losing 20 something percent of your endowment income, right, that you were counting on to fund programs. You also lose the ability to charge $200,000 for a physical therapy degree or something like that, because you're now capped at this 100 or 150K borrowing limit, and private lenders are not going to be willing to finance any amount above that unless you have pristine credit, which not a lot of families have that super prime FICO scores with huge amounts of money that don't need that also need to borrow for it. So you're getting slammed on the borrowing amounts. And so even if you're a prestigious school, you're going to have to lay off a bunch of people, and that's a swing state. You're talking about a lot of people getting laid off, a lot of people that would be extremely upset, a lot of their families that would be extremely upset, right? And you might believe that this is the right thing to do, but from a political standpoint, do you want to turn up the heat that much? Or do you dial it back and do you say, well, maybe we'll do a borrowing limit of $300,000 instead of $150,000? Or maybe we'll do a borrowing limit dependent on, you know, if somebody's a Pell Grant recipient or something like that, to, you know, acknowledge that some people don't have as many financial resources to pay cash for things. You might be more entertaining that if you were a more moderate senator than if you're from a House district that it's on average 60% Republicans, 40% Democrats, that your primary concern is being primaried. So this is what I mean by we have a long road ahead on this RAP plan proposal, because the Senate's proposing just reinstating the repay plan. No filing separate, just 10% of income for 25 years for grad, 20 years for undergrad. Honestly, if they did the repay plan and allow married filing separate, that would be a pretty fair plan. Even for folks that were on the pay or the IBR plan, you can make an argument, well, the repay plan has some interest subsidies in there. So I hope that cooler heads prevail, and I hope that a more reasonable proposal comes out. But, you know, right now I do find it deeply troubling that they're not honoring existing contracts. Obviously, I don't get a say in this. I'm not an elected official. I can only inform you and empower you to let your elected officials know how you feel about this if you're impacted. So I hope that you just type in who's my House member, who's my senator, and then send an email to all three of them, two senators and one House member, and let them know that you expect the pay and the new IBR plans to be honored for existing borrowers. That's important right now. The Senate will moderate this bill, I believe, at some level. And I do think that folks will look at those borrowing limits, 150K, and they'll say, wow, this will cause a mass shuttering of programs all around the country. And the reality is yeah, you might be anti-higher education, but are you anti having enough pharmacists, enough physical therapists, enough veterinarians, dentists, et cetera, to service the population? Now, kind of interestingly enough, I want to be transparent too about this. If you're listening to this and you already have a good plan for your loans, you're good no matter what, you know you're going to be doing IBR no matter what. Maybe you're paying 15% of income instead of 10, right? But you know you're going for forgiveness because you have over 2-to-1 debt to income ratio, or you have a modest amount of debt and you know you're going to be paying it back anyway. In some ways, if they drastically cut back on the supply of new entrants to the field, from a financial perspective, that probably helps your long-term income. And that's not something that I'm saying that we should celebrate or attack, or I'm not saying anything about that being good or bad. I'm just saying in terms of what would the impacts of this bill be. If you cut back on graduates completing their programs and as many people that would be not entering school if this bill passes, you might go from however many several thousand of pharmacists that graduate a year, you might see that number drop by half. And if you saw that number drop by half, what will happen is you'll produce far fewer, you know, new graduates that are pharmacists. I'm just picking on pharmacists as an example. You know, you'll produce way fewer pharmacists. And if you think about supply demand, that sets pricing for incomes. So if you have way less supply, you have much higher salaries. And then if you're at an employer that doesn't increase your salary, if you're a pharmacist, you will get contacted by recruiters and other companies that do have to pay that market rate to hire somebody they have to hire. And you could switch to that new job, and then your existing employer will not want you to leave, so they will have to increase prices. Now, what happens? You cannot increase salaries in a vacuum. The consumer will pay for this in the form of higher prices, because that's just the way economics works, right? You can't just go in isolation, raise somebody's salaries 50% and not expect consumers to pay more for that. Now, maybe all this should happen. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. I don't get a vote in that. You do. The problem is, you know, you would have all of the graduate professions be kids from much wealthier families. You would lose a lot of diversity in these fields. You would lose a lot of economic diversity in these fields. Students coming from first-generation backgrounds that are able to enter these professions with existing loan limits. All of these things are massive earthquake-level changes in higher ed. So this RAP plan, the good news, if there is good news, is there are some interest subsidies. It does work like the SAVE plan. You would still be able to get some interest subsidies early on in your career if you're waiting, you know, planning to pay off your loans. You might want to wait and stay on the RAP plan for a little bit. I wouldn't hold it against somebody if they hung out on the IBR plan, though, for the rest of President Trump's term, just to see how the 2028 election goes. Because who knows, in terms of, you know, people who switch onto that RAP plan, would you be counted as a new borrower for the new loan rules? And would, you know, Democrats like revert back to the pay plan, the new IBR plan? Would they only revert back for people that stay on IBR? I don't know. That's a really complex question. The one thing I can tell you for sure is if a bill that reforms student loans is passed in a pure partisan vote, it's not going to survive. The original PSLF bill passed with 79 votes in the Senate. That's the kind of thing that sticks around. Something that passes with 51 votes in the Senate gets changed the second the other party's in power. So that's the difficulty in all this, is how do you give somebody advice when a program changes, potentially it changes, it hasn't done it yet, in such a massive way, but then you also have to think about the fact that, well, we know that even though they're saying this is the new set of rules, that is 100% not going to be what's going to last for the next 20 years. Absolutely not. You'll never see a extremely partisan bill last for decades. Like, it just doesn't, unless it was passed with massive majorities, like the 60s, where you had partisan bills, but they were passed with overwhelming numbers of votes because Democrats had huge majorities in the Congress, right? Or in the financial crisis era where President Obama was in charge and his party had huge majorities, and they passed things like Dodd-Frank and the ACA and things like that. The reason those things have stuck around is because they were passed with enormous majorities. You know, things like the American Rescue Plan, President Biden passed it early 2021. A lot of that stuff's expiring because they didn't have enough majorities to keep it and make it permanent. Build Back Better didn't pass at all because they didn't have sufficiently large majorities. So we'll see. This is going to really test this Republican Congress to see if they can get anything out at all. I do think they will, but I obviously hope that we see a lot more moderate version. But now is the time to let your elected officials know what it all means. Now, if you're super confused and you need a plan and you need some help navigating all of this, there are still a lot of ways to save money. There's still a lot of decisions that need to be made about consolidation or not. How could this affect me if I'm a Parent Plus borrower? How could this affect me if I'm wanting to start a dental practice? How could this affect me if I need to go for PS Left forgiveness, or if I need to do buyback, or if I need to decide, will I have a manageable payment if they force me onto the old IBR plan? And what would my payment be if I got pushed into the RAP plan or I wanted to switch into it? We can obviously help with all that. Studentloanplanner.com/book if you want to get a plan or refresh your existing plan. Or reach out to your SLP Wealth Financial Planner if you work with us on that side of the business. And then if you have a question that you'd like to ask us on our podcast, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail to ask your question. We'd love to answer it. We love getting your questions. We'll probably have a whole lot to answer in an upcoming show. Just know that there's going to be a lot that's going to happen this summer. The House has to pass the reconciliation by September 30th because of budgetary rules. I predict that we will know something by August. That is only a couple months away or a few months away. So buckle up. It's going to be one of the most chaotic summers for student loans ever. And that's saying something because I've been doing this for 10 years and I know how chaotic student loans can be. We will be here to guide you through it. I hope you get help if you need it. Thank you for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.